I'm so happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Barbara Malden. She's curator of Latin American folk art at the Museum of International Folk Art. And the new exhibition, Brasil y Arte Popular, is opening this Sunday, the 17th of November, at the museum. And it is a fantastic exhibition. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
And I just had the privilege to see it. I love doing that. I came earlier in the week to see you guys installing it. And so there's that wonderful energy when people are putting the whole thing together. But this exhibition came from both the museum's collection, well, it's all the museum's collection, but from various sources. How did it come together?
Well, that's true. We've been really fortunate over the years to have generous donors who've given us fantastic pieces of Brazilian folk art. I'm sure we have the best collection of Brazilian folk art, certainly in the U.S. and probably throughout much of Latin America outside of Brazil. And, you know, being rare, being a folk art museum in the U.S., people think of us when they have their collection. So, starting with Mr. Gerard, he was collecting, and a woman named Catarina Rael lived in Brazil in the 60s and was very instrumental in helping promote the folk arts, particularly in the northeastern part. And eventually she donated her collection to us. And then most recently, in the late 1990s, a couple from St. Louis, Beige and Jim Smith, had been collecting, put together a major collection for a couple of exhibits that Beige had done in a museum in St. Louis, and that came to us in the late 1990s. So it represents a range of time and different regions, and it's a beautiful collection. And so this show, and also many years ago I did my carnival show, and I had included some of the Recife Carnival in that. So I bring some of that back out again. And so it's a really wonderful way to show off what we have. We probably, in the total collection, have about 600 pieces, and this show's a little over 300. So
you have to go through that whole thing of which of the fantastic pieces we have are we going to actually display. I mean, when I think about all those pieces of art that are in the basement of every museum in this country, it's staggering.
It's true, and it's really the fun part of the job to start out, especially with a show like this, which is really intended to show off our collection. And so I could go through the whole thing and start picking out the really stellar pieces and then putting together groupings of those and then shaping that into something that is meaningful for our audience and educational as well. So you know, it's a really creative process. It's almost like writing a book in a way, because you have lots of things to kind of think about and work from, and it's very visual as well. And I love designing. I get to put together the groupings of the little vignettes in the cases. So it satisfies a lot of the curator's job, you know, and what we love doing. And so I think it's a big show. It's actually surprisingly a large show for a relatively small space that we're putting it in, the Neutrogena wing. But it's I think it covers, it's a really nice representation of Brazilian folk art.
The show opens when you walk in. There's a whole section of basically woodblock prints by somebody named José Borges and his family. And there's an interesting story about how those came to be.
This started out as a poetry sort of troubadour tradition that was brought into Brazil by the Portuguese in the 16th century. And it was very common in Europe to have traveling poets and storytellers go from little town telling the latest news and gossip, because we didn't have a radio or ways of knowing. Even newspapers were only in the city. So some of this was told in a ballad form, almost as poetry, and sung out to the crowds in the markets. And that was a tradition that was retained into the 20th century in the interior of Pernambuco, one of the states up in northeastern Brazil. And as a young man, this man, José Borges, started going around selling. They would make little chapbooks that had the words written down in them and little pictures on the front. And they'd go to the markets here and sing those stories and tell them like they were doing in Portugal. And so he became very successful at this. So he started writing his own little poems, and then made illustrations to go on the front. And these are woodcuts. And he taught himself to do this. He uses a kitchen knife, which he sharpens. And his work became very popular, and other poets would hire him to do the little covers on their booklets as well.
I have to say, it's such a kind of weirdly beautiful tradition, at least to my sensibilities, that there are people selling poetry in the market, presumably next to people selling chickens and fruit.
Exactly. It's true, and it was still going on when I first went to Brazil in the early 1990s. It was still going on. I think today maybe not quite as much, but it's a beautiful tradition to see that. And not only is it interesting in terms of hearing them telling the stories, the little woodcut images are fabulous. They're very simple, but they capture, you know, something important about that story. Often they're sort of humorous stories. And by about the 1970s, he became... he was encouraged by some of the art dealers and some publishers to do individual woodcuts just separate from the little booklets. And so he started making larger woodcuts, you know, they're called little wood blocks, and producing single images that then could be sold. And those became an instant success, hugely popular, and it spurred a number of other artists to try their hand. So we have quite a few different examples of artists' work in the exhibit, in the collection, many of whom are family members of his, but also other people who were producing the little woodblocks for the chapbooks. Chapbooks are known as literatura de cordel in Portuguese, which means literature on a string, because in the markets they would actually clip these little booklets to a string, like a clothesline. And cordel means string, but that's become the word now to refer to the little booklet. So if you hear the word cordel, that's what we're talking about.
We're talking to Barbara Malden about the exhibition Brasil e Arte Popular. Now, some people may not know that the landmass of Brazil is virtually the same size as the continental United States. It's a vast country with so many different peoples and geographies. Are there any particular places that are particularly prolific in folk art or in your collection?
Yes, the northeastern area, which was really the first that was settled in Brazil, and where it's actually where the Brazil kind of bumps out into the Atlantic Ocean, and it was the closest destination from Africa when they were bringing slaves across. And so that was a very early colonial area, and so we have a mixture of indigenous peoples, the Portuguese, the European, and then the African slaves. It's a real mix of traditions that came together and created this really vibrant folk art as it comes into the 20th and 21st century. So that region, Pernambuco, and that area of northeastern Brazil, very rich and very well covered in our collection. And then another big area is the Minas Gerais, which is a little bit further south and into the interior, which became an important mining area. So very wealthy, a lot of settlement ended up in that region. And we're seeing a lot of wood carving coming out. There seems to be a lot of wood and ceramic as well. People who are producing folk art often start out as kids making toys. It's the same story you hear over and over again from the interviews with these artists. So they were using the materials at hand, and certainly clay is one, and then wood. So that's another very prolific area. And then, of course, down in the Bahia Salvador region, there's wonderful, some more Afro-Brazilian folk arts that we show in the religious section of this exhibit, looking at the traditions that were brought in there. So I'd say those are sort of the three main regions, but we do have a little bit of Amazonian material and some other examples from other states, but those are the richest.
And the Amazonian one contains a lot of animal imagery. Well, there's a lot of animal imagery throughout, I suppose.
It's interesting, and it comes from different sources because we don't see a lot of animals running around the cities, usually. The jaguar seems to be the most common animal they find in the environment, and people tend to portray the jaguar hunter as often being chased by the jaguar, which is probably kind of a humorous aspect of that whole thing. But also people visiting a traveling circus would get inspired by the lions, for instance. So we see that sort of animal being interpreted through folk art too, which is kind of the fantasy, you know, thing. But that's fun. But most of the imagery is self-reflecting of the Brazilian people themselves, looking at themselves in different aspects of daily life or occupations.
Yeah, there's some really, I like the way that you put that, self-reflection. There's so many figures, and there's a lot of pregnant ladies, there's market people, there's people in so many kind of daily life activities. And I guess that's just one of the traditions of Brazilian folk art.
Well, you see that in folk art. I mean, that's not uncommon. But I would say in Brazil, because I am the curator of all of the Latin American collections, in Brazil it seems to be even more so, you know, all through at least what our collection. And if you look through books of Brazilian folk art, it's common to find, you know, artist after artist in region after region portraying different aspects of Brazilian life and often of themselves. And it's sometimes very humorous kind of ways to look at.
What are some of your favorites?
Well, I love the work from the Alto de Mora in the interior of Pernambuco. You know, the Retirantes, the family escaping the drought, which is a common occurrence in that interior area, and, you know, which we can relate to here, too. And so it's, you know, showing this whole family, including the little grandmother riding side saddle, smoking her pipe, you know, and to the younger kids holding the babies. And then...
Although I have to say, I mean, we know drought, but we don't know escaping drought on donkeys.
No, and I think this is something, this is a back area of Brazil that people still lived a pretty basic farming lifestyle and would have to move with the agricultural seasons and that sort of thing. So it's not unlike the migrant farmers, I guess, that we would know in the U.S., but there they're being forced in a different way, I guess, than we might say with the kinds of crops and seasonal changes going on here. But I also really like the women who made the big brides, you know, in this interior region of Minas Gerais, where they really live in very isolated areas. I've talked to people who've driven in there, and it's quite a hardy trip to get there. And they're creating these beautiful, large figures of brides with, you know, very beautiful faces and blue eyes. And it's sort of their fantasy of what they think of in the cities, probably. You know, it's sort of their way of reflecting on somebody else's dream in life. And so that's fun, too, to see. And these are older women who are creating these that become a very good livelihood for them, actually.
There's a lot of women and men artists. Is folk art kind of equally divided?
I would say so. Women carve wood and men also do ceramics. You often think ceramics as being a woman's art or carving, but it goes both directions in Brazil. And it just takes a certain skill and working at it, I think, and developing it. Another important part of this story is that the Brazilians themselves love folk art. And there's a big collecting going on. And I mean, among all different ranges of people in different classes of society. But they love folk art. So they've really been able to support this whole movement. And folk art's actually very expensive in Brazil.
Isn't that right?
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard to compete with the Brazilian currency these days, and because it's a very strong economy. And so, I'm glad we were able to get the pieces that were collected earlier on, because it's really become. It's very, you know, the folk art galleries, like in Rio de Janeiro, São Paulo, are full of fabulous things, but I can't afford them to buy them. And then the shipping, of course, getting them home is hard. But I think that's an important aspect, that there is a big community of supporting folk art. So these women out in Minas Gerais have a strong clientele who keep them going, and they can create these wonderful pieces. So
we're talking to Barbara Malden of the Museum of International Folk Art. And of course, it being Brazil, there's lots of music and musicians, and of course, it's visual art, it's a gallery, but you will have some soundtracks and videos.
That's right, and I'm very conscious of the Brazilian, you know, musical traditions and dance and singing, and we don't really collect musical instruments. We have a little bit here and there, but nothing really, you know, worthy of showing in our gallery. So I'm covering that aspect of this, of the folk traditions, through our videos. I have 5 different videos throughout the different sections of the exhibit, and one area being festivals. So that's where we'll actually see a lot of instruments being played and hear the music and see the dancing and the costume characters come alive. And that's a really good way to introduce that into exhibits, I think.
When you look at Brazilian folk art in the context of Latin American folk art, there's similarities, do those similarities come about through contact or just come about through the reality that people live similar lives in different places, whether they've known each other or not?
I think it's what the second that you said. I think it's that people are coming out of small communities often, or they're in the city where they're just watching, you know, the man climb up the electrical pole, so they want to show something about that, you know, that they're fascinated with. But I think people are observers, and they are making things by hand. Often that tends to create sort of a visual look that might seem similar. Like you were pointing out, some of the ceramic pieces from Pernambuco looked a lot like what we might find in Oaxaca.
Yeah.
Very natural clay. You know, big imagery showing women holding flowers or something like that. So it's probably partly just a coincidence that this is what people end up wanting to portray, and that those are the natural materials. And but Brazil is a little different, and you'll see more the Afro-Brazilian faces coming through than you might find in the Afro-Mexican, say, for instance,
right.
Some of the imagery. Because Brazil, of course, had the huge, huge population of slaves brought in, and that still very much permeates Brazilian culture today and adds this very breezy quality, I would say, to the whole language and the, you know, body language and people intermixing. And it's a beautiful country. Also, the other thing we keep in mind, especially in the Northeast, is very close to the equator. Very warm, hot, humid climate. And that changes, that affects your personalities.
Yeah.
And just the way people interact with life in general, you know. So it's beautiful. It's really nice.
And, of course, the Afro-Brazilian tradition has a lot in common with the Afro-Cuban tradition.
Exactly, and what we might see in Haiti as well with the Vodou, Santeria. In Brazil, the Afro-Brazilian religion, which it comes from a similar base, mostly West Africa, Yoruba being a strong component of this religious base. In Brazil, it has different names. In Recife area, it's known as Xango. He's their main orisha. And then in Salvador, Bahia, it's called Candomblé. And down in Rio, it's Umbanda. So, since it's such a large country as opposed to a small island of Cuba, you know, it can take on slightly different personalities, but it's based out of the same as we find in Cuba. It's a beautiful religion, as you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I include some of that in the exhibit because I think it's important to show that.
So we're talking about the exhibit Brasil e Arte Popular, which is opening this Sunday at the Museum of International Folk Art. Now, will there be events and music and all sorts of things accompanying the show?
Well, we're opening the show on Sunday afternoon, and we will have a capoeira group from Albuquerque. They have a component here in Santa Fe, and a capoeira is sort of a martial art performance music, very lively, fun thing to watch, and I think that the group in Albuquerque has been practicing now for a few months, and they're going to be showing their students off a little bit, because a lot of, in Santa Fe too, there's a couple different schools of capoeira. It's very popular with young men and women. You don't have to be totally athletic to be able to pull it off, but it's a really fun thing to watch as a observer as well. And maybe you can, I don't know if your eyesight's better than mine, but we have the name of the group there, which I probably can't pronounce very well anyway, but it's
Capoeira Cordão de Ouro Canhaçal.
Something, that sounds good.
That's not right.
But it's a wonderful group, and the maestro of this group is from Brazil. He's very accomplished and has been highly recognized in Brazil, and so he's come to the States. He travels quite a bit, but we're fortunate we were able to pin him down to come do the performance. And he's going to be performing between 1:30 and 4, kind of on and off with the group. So I think, you know, if you come see the show, you should be able to watch some of their performance. And then later in the spring, we're going to have Frank Lito and Pilar. I don't know if you know their work from...
Yeah, because they're also Afro-Cuban dancers.
Albuquerque. We're going to do a big Afro-Brazilian performance with them in April. And excellent. And the show was originally supposed to close in August of next summer, but now it's been extended into early January of 2015. So we'll probably try to plan some other things during the fall. But we do a lot with school groups. We're featuring it in our Folk Art to Go program with this, and we're going to be doing a teacher in service in January, which really gives the teachers good curriculum for them to use our exhibit in the classrooms and bring groups throughout the year. And so that's, you know, a real important part of what we do at the museum.
Barbara Malden is curator of Latin American folk art at the Museum of International Folk Art. Brasil e Arte Popular opens Sunday, November 17th from 1 to 4 at the Museum of International Folk Art. And it's free to New Mexico residents and others with museum admission. Thank you so much for being with us again here on the Radio
Cafe.
Thank
you for having me. We'll look forward to seeing you.
Yes.